Yes, ma'am, I know.
And they sometimes call you nomads.
My mom said that you're homeless. Is that true?
No, I'm not homeless. I'm just houseless. Not the same thing, right?
No.
My husband worked at the USG mine in Empire. I was a substitute teacher.
It is a tough time right now. You may want to consider early retirement.
I need work. I like work.
What the nomads are doing is not that different than what the pioneers did. I think Fern's part of an American tradition.
My dad used to say, what's remembered lives. I maybe spent too much of my life just remembering.
One of the things I love most about this life is that there's no final goodbye. I've met hundreds of people out here, and I don't ever say a final goodbye. Is just say, I'll see you down the road. And I do. I see them again. And I can be certain in my heart, I'll see you again.
This year's winner for Best Picture, Nomadland, audio described. Saturday night at 7. On Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 72 and cloudy. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the low 60s. Then tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night it will be cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
Certainly, I don't want to make it sound like it was easy. It certainly wasn't easy. And at times, I felt like I was being tortured because I could go to bed one night with pretty good vision. So pretty good vision being maybe 40-20 vision or something, or 60-20 vision. And I considered that a blessing. And I would wake up the next morning and not be able to see at all.
This show came as a result of a note we received that said, who wants to hire a blind interior designer? And I guess we'll learn that this week.
The answer turned out to be quite a few people. We'll speak with John Robert Wiltgen about his long and successful career as an interior designer in spite of his visual impairment. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from John Wiltgen.
I believe that we, you know, have the choice of deciding we're going to be happy or not. And which one do you want to be? You end up having a lot more fun, and it's easier to make friends when you're happy. The reality of the world we all live in is that everyone's got a story. And we could all come up with numerous reasons why we could be or should be depressed all the time. But I think that, you know, on the other side of that, we can also find a lot of reasons to be thankful for whatever it is we do have. And I chose to always go in that direction. You know, do you turn left or do you turn right?
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
Navi Lens, a four-color QR code designed to be located and read from up to 60 feet away without the need to focus on it. Personal places and items can be tagged and shared with family and friends with codes obtained inside the Navi Lens app, available for iPhone and Android. More information is at navilens.com.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting John.
My name is John Robert Wiltkin. I have been a type 1 diabetic for 53 years, and as a result of that have encountered all sorts of complications. When I was diagnosed in 1967, there was very little known about the treatment of diabetes, and except that I was 8 years old, my parents were told I probably wouldn't make it to 30. I'm 61 years old right now.
That is a tough disease. And I understand as a result of that, it led to some visual problems.
The very first complications that I encountered was retinopathy. Those circumstances started in my early 20s. The blood vessels in the back of my retina began to break. What I was seeing was like this cobweb of blood in the back of my eye.
What is the state of your vision these days?
The state of my vision now is I am totally blind in one eye, and I have about 16% vision in the other eye. I cannot drive a car. I have no peripheral vision at all. So I'm really dangerous walking down the street. Like, I'll trip over some little old lady or trip over a baby stroller or whatever. So I do not venture out of my home without either my husband or a friend, and then we'll just walk arm in arm down the street, because that way they can pull me to the left, pull me to the right, make me stand still while people walk around us.
Do you use a cane or a guide dog, or do you rely on individuals?
Right. I think the individuals are easier to take care of than a guide dog.
Well, I assume they need to eat, but at least that's not your problem.
I mean, I live in a high-rise condo, so, and we just got like 12 inches of snow, so it's not like I can just open the front door to the building and let the dog go right out into the street and do whatever and then come back in, you know?
So you don't even find that a cane might be helpful in navigating around or signaling to other people that you have a visual impairment?
The answer to that is yes, it most certainly would make my life easier, but two things. Number one, I'm German, and number two, I'm a Leo. What does that tell you? I'm stubborn.
Now, we'll talk about this more in just a minute, but we should let our listeners know that as a visually impaired person, you have a very interesting job that is quite unusual for someone who can't see so well. Tell us what that is.
I'm an interior designer, or I was. I've retired. After 40 years, I retired. By the time I retired, I had amassed 40 awards for the work that I had created. I worked all around the world, and since my retirement 4 years ago, I've collected 5 more awards.
Interior design covers a wide range of subfields. What was your specialty?
My specialty was residential design. And I worked the other side of it, meaning that I worked with developers manipulating floor plans that they were then going to sell to their customer base, designing their sales centers, designing their models, doing their lobbies. But because it's not like I was selling 100 of something, I was only selling 1 of something, it was fun in that I could continue to try different things. Certainly my perspective was different. My work maybe had more contrast in it than where another designer might do everything just in the same shade of gray. I was needing to create contrast so that we could see the difference between an object on a wall and a chair and a coffee table. Also, good lighting. I mean, in the house that I'm living in right now, which is about 2,200 square feet, a two-bedroom condo, I put in 85 recessed lights to help me see.
And it probably makes everybody else who walks into that condo have an easier time seeing also.
They need sunglasses.
They can deal with it.
Right.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners.
Find out more about partnership opportunities by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is John Robert Wiltkin's successful and prolific career as a blind interior designer and how he was able to do it.
In the introduction, you mentioned that you are an interior designer, and we've already talked about your visual impairment. Tell us why someone want to hire a visually impaired interior designer.
Well, people didn't know. I mean, I didn't tell them. I wasn't going to say, hi, I think I could do, you know, I have a great feeling for old houses. I mean, literally, that was the line that I used. But I couldn't say, I can't see, but I got a good staff who will help me interpret your project. So I had a woman that worked with me at the time, and we would walk into every job arm in arm, and she'd be whispering in my ear, 7 steps up, turn to the left, turn to the right, hole in the floor, look out. I mean, you know, giving me all these clues so I could navigate my way around whatever that interior may have been. But in one particular instance, I remember her saying to me, oh my God, John, I wish you could see this house. It is the most amazing house you have ever been asked to design.
So I guess you saw enough to get around to be able to look at people, even if you couldn't see the details of their faces. And with a little bit of assistance, you were actually able to perpetuate this cover-up for a pretty long time.
Well, for the first half of the 1980s, I mean, I would go from having 220 vision to having totally no vision at all. And then it would come back for a little while, and then it would go away again. But there were times when I was totally blind, and my parents who lived in Texas kept saying, you know, you should move to Texas. Texas has great programs for visually impaired people. And I just didn't want to do that. So I was living on my own. At that time, there was no such thing as an insulin pump. So I had to find someone who would fill a handful of syringes for me so that I could take them as needed. I mean, if you can't see what's going into it, you can't self-dose a syringe.
Oh, right. Yeah. So I guess you learned to become very flexible with your eyesight changing from time to time and just work around those issues.
Yes. And I mean, certainly I don't want to make it sound like it was easy. It certainly wasn't easy. And at times I felt like I was being tortured because I could go to bed one night with pretty good vision. So pretty good vision being maybe 40/20 vision or something, or 60/20 vision. And I considered that a blessing.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
Right? And I would wake up the next morning and not be able to see at all.
Yeah. I had a similar situation in college. Towards the end of my college career, I had had glaucoma throughout my life, and it was getting worse and worse as I went through college. In my last couple of years, there were some days I could hold up a book close to my nose and read it perfectly well, you know, although very closely. And then there were other days where my eyes were just very blurry and fuzzy, and I just couldn't make out anything. And I had to learn to do my homework and do my assignments when my eyes were cooperating, and then when they weren't, I'd do something else. So you learn to be flexible.
Right. Yes.
I guess the other advantage you had in your career was you were sighted when you were young. In fact, you still had reasonable sight during some periods, so you had a sense of what the world was. You knew what things looked like. You knew what colors were and how colors interacted. That had to be a big advantage.
Yeah, when I was 17 years old, I had already graduated from high school. I graduated from high school in 3 years, and the next year I was the manager of the Midwest model branch for the Glidden Paint Store. I had 10 people that worked in my store. My assistant manager was 54 years old, which to a 17-year-old seems like grandpa, and that's what I used to call him.
That's pretty funny.
But, I mean, and working my way up to that position, I mean, I was working the retail floor, and I would sell people wallpaper, and then I would custom match colors to melt off the background of that particular wallpaper or a color that complemented the wallpaper or whatever, you know. And that was really how I got a taste for the industry. I also, before that even, was working in a professional theater, and that was really my introduction to the magic that could be created with good lighting and fabrics and just a few pieces of interesting objects to make your stage setting tell a story.
So some of your first major changes in vision happened in your early 20s. Was that about the time when you were deciding what your career path in life was going to be? Or had you already decided?
I had already decided by that time that was my career path. And so I started my business a second time around after starting it the first time around with a partner, which is where I learned that the only good partner is a dead one. a little bit of word of advice there. One day, her husband came to beat the shit out of me in our office for a reason I won't go into, and we're out in the hallway, and I'm on the ground, and he's on top of me, and he's 30 years older than me and the size of a football player, and I'm awake. You know, I'm like 137 pounds, 5'11". And a man comes out from the office across the hall and puts a gun to this guy's head and says, "I suggest you get off that young man."
Oh, gee.
So after that, I went back into having my own business as opposed to having a business partner. And it was that way, really, for 40 years.
Had you reconsidered your career choice at all after you started having these rather dramatic vision issues?
No.
You just
not.
Decided you were going to tough it out and work it out somehow, one way or another.
Somehow I was going to make it work.
So I understand that you had an entire staff eventually, once you built up your business and you could have people assisting you with whatever you might have needed. But in your early to mid-20s, you were just getting started.
Yes.
How did you deal with getting around the visual issues?
Well, I mean, I always had a staff because, well, I didn't for the first 6 months, let's put it that way. But then once I started having eye problems, I needed help. And so what that meant was maybe I wouldn't get a paycheck for 2 or 3 months in order to have money to pay people who could help me. And so it's a matter of priorities. You know, everybody for mine, the entire tenure of my career, got paid before I did.
Well, because you needed them. I mean,
right.
You were also, I assume, being a nice guy and an honorable boss. But without them, the business wouldn't have succeeded.
At times, it would not. That's correct.
Well, that's an interesting way of approaching the challenge of having a visual problem, is to surround yourself with a team. You know, everybody has complementary skills at some point. Not everybody is, you know, an expert at everything. So even for someone who is sighted, it makes sense to surround yourself with a team. But in your case, it was essential, but also enabling.
Yeah, I was always a hard worker. I excelled in school. I was kicked out of design school, but probably because I was German and I'm a Leo, and I think I know everything. And particularly, you know, when you're in the upper years of your teenagehood, you really think you know everything and nobody can tell you anything.
You only get stupider with age.
Right. Well, as I say, yeah, the older we get, the less we understand that we really know, you know? And that is so true. I mean, I think of what I thought I knew back then and what I realized over time I didn't necessarily know, which then required that the people that I hired come with a certain set of skills to help fill in the blanks.
So you already told us that you don't use a cane or a dog. You rely on people to get you around. I'm wondering, in your profession, do you use any assistive devices, screen magnification on your computer, speech synthesis?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have my fonts turned way up. Sometimes I will have my computer read incoming emails, and that's really the extent of it.
Mm-hmm. As an interior designer, that encompasses many different facets of making an interior space look the way you want it to look. Selection of materials, you even move walls, right?
Oh, you know what? I do so much more than that. I've designed homes from the ground up, including a 40,000 square foot home under roof in Lagos, Nigeria.
Wow. So the question is, of these various facets of your job, what parts are the most challenging with a visual impairment?
Traveling about a country that you've never been to before. I mean, because, you know, after a while, the floors of the merchandise mart, I've walked those hallways so many times that after a while it's like secondary to me. And I could visualize what was on a floor without having to be able to see. But the first time I got off the plane in Lagos, Nigeria, I had two people traveling with me that were on my team, plus one of my client's emissaries was traveling with us because it was not safe for us to travel without him. And when we got off the plane, we were met by two bodyguards carrying AK-47s.
Oh, that'll make you feel reassured.
Right at home. You know? Yeah.
You mentioned that you, for the most part, get by without telling your clients that you're visually impaired, and through the use of assistance, you can get through the day and through the interactions without people finding out about your visual issues. But I would guess occasionally some client does find out, and I'm wondering, when they do, what is their reaction at that point?
Well, usually they find out when the relationship has changed from being a client to becoming a very dear friend. And I have a lot of people that I would say that was the condition. I mean, one client I did seven houses for, one in Captiva Island, one in Holland, Michigan, and then a bunch in the Chicagoland area. And so after 20 years of working together, they kind of got the sense of something not being right, although they couldn't put their finger on it. And it wasn't only that I couldn't tell them that I couldn't see, but shortly after we thought we resolved these visual problems, then it came time to have a kidney transplant. And, you know, when you are self-employed, I always say that being self-employed is the closest thing to being unemployed. You never know where your next client or your next job or your next paycheck is coming from.
Yes.
And so you are doing everything you can to put your best foot forward until they chop that off, which was something that happened to me years later. So there was all kinds of stuff that I just did not share with my clients unless they had crossed that threshold of not only being a client but being a very dear friend.
But interesting, after nearly 20 years, they still hadn't figured out that you had these visual problems, except for having a sense that there's something a little different. So you did pretty well at hiding it.
Yeah. You know, for the longest time, I had a Russian driver who would drive my car for me, and I would sit in the back seat and make phone calls for the hour or hour and a half that I was in my car coming and going to a job. So, you know, that kind of inflated the persona. You know, like, oh my God, this guy's got a driver, he's got 10 other people in the office, he's got this, he's got that, blah, 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 you know? It's all about marketing, I guess.
Interesting point, yes.
And how you position yourself in the environment. I mean, you know, there were times I went out to dinner with clients and I had my menu upside down. Not knowing that I had my menu upside down, I just, you know, picked it up and pretended to be staring at it and pretended to be reading it. And I would always listen to what the waiter said was their specials for the evening. And a special with salmon was typically what I went with, you know? But one evening, this woman, she's like, oh my God, John, your menu's upside down. And my assistant that was with me, she's like, oh, he's just testing you to see how observant you are. It's something that we need to know when we're starting a new project, you know? And then I turned it upside down. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that we passed that one, you know? And I got this job, which ended up being three different buildings for a developer that was converting them to condominiums, and they needed all their hallways done, their lobby done, and their models done. And they were going to be very visible projects. So we weren't the only ones bidding on them, but we got them. And, you know, it was just stuff like that.
Well, it sounds like despite your visual issues and other associated issues, that you've had quite a successful and fun career.
The most important thing is that you love what you do. It isn't about how much money you made or even about the awards that you may or may not get. It's just about that you love what you're doing, because when you're putting in 8 or 10 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week, you'd better get something more from it than just a paycheck. And I got so many things out of it, and I wouldn't have traded any of it for 2020 vision.
Well, that is a very good attitude and a very important concept to carry around in life.
You are listening to Ithon Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to see photos of some of John Robert Wilkins' work, how to find his blog, in which he talks about his work and other stuff, and how to contact him directly.
John, if people had questions for you, would they be able to contact you?
Sure. They could do that at my blog, which is john@thecandyinmypocket.com.
What a fun name. And what does your blog contain?
It contains stories about, you know, having your leg chopped off, just everyday things, a kidney transplant, not being able to see, life with diabetes, and then travels abroad. I've been all over the world. I was kicked out of the casino in Monte Carlo with 14 clients of mine. And, you know, the women were all begolded, bejeweled to death. The men were all in tuxedos. But we were having too much fun. Let me just put it that way.
And what's the web address for the blog?
Oh, it would be, I guess, www.thecandyinmypocket.com. That title for my blog is the same title for a book that I've been writing for 3 years, which is now finished. And so the other part of the equation to getting published is finding an agent and finding a publisher. So I'm working on that currently. It's been a long haul.
Great.
Now, you're an interior designer. I assume your business has a website if people want to see pictures of your work?
Yep, JRWDesign.com.
And I have to say, I've been to that website, and there are many, many photos of very different kinds of interiors, and they are spectacular.
Thank you for saying that. I was selling style at the end of my day, and solutions that met families' needs to move on to a bigger house, a smaller house, a more open house, a country house, a house in Africa, whatever, mm-hmm. You know? And each one of those circumstances came with a different set of requirements. But at the end of the day, not only did I want it to meet those requirements, but I wanted it to also be something that their guests were in awe of when they first came to visit and when they came back to visit.
And if you missed any of that contact information, it will be in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 2117. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with Dean Hudson about his career path from technologist to accessibility evangelist. Dean's vision began deteriorating as a child, but he never let that stop him. Developing an interest in computers as a youth, he went on to have a long career in technology and is now Apple's accessibility evangelist, and we will be talking with him about that journey.
We had a great time talking with Dean, and we hope you'll join us for that episode next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Men's Health Magazine, followed by USA Today at 2.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Aphasia Center of West Texas has scheduled a tribute to the legendary Queen and Freddie Mercury. Live and virtual options, May 7th. She's a killer queen, got that identity. We will rock you. We are the champions, my friend. At the Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Scholarship is available. To sponsor, make a reservation, or for more information, call 432-699-1261. All we hear is Radio Kaka, Radio Kuku. Or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert. Call 432-699-1261 or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 72 and cloudy. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the low 60s. Then tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night it will be cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to our program. My name is Peter Gilmore, and I'll be reading Men's Health Magazine, here on site, into Sound Radio. First up, the Great Middle Age Survey. 37 years old. That's the actual middle age, as in the median age of men in America today. It's also nearly halfway through the average guy's lifespan. We surveyed hundreds of 37-year-olds to find out what ambitions, beliefs, and anxieties define this moment and help prepare them for the next. A while back, over lunch with a friend, me, salad, he, cheeseburger. I yammered on about my fitness kick. Peloton and 10,000 steps a day. Intermittent fasting and meditating 10 minutes every morning. Cold showers and breathing exercise. The works. He put his hand on mine and said, "Max, you know that even if you do all of this, you're still going to die, right?" Those words landed like a punch to the gut. What the hell is he talking about death for, I thought. I'm still a kid. Spoiler alert, I'm not. I was 37, but certainly isn't one foot in the grave, but I made an unnerving discovery. Statistically speaking, 37 is the median age of men in America right now, and also almost halfway to the end of the average man's life expectancy, which is 76. Meaning a whole lot of guys happen to be at the same boat as I, midway between cradle and grave, if we're lucky. Middle age is a nebulous term. The Cambridge Dictionary defines it as the period of life usually considered to be from the age of 45 to 60, when you are no longer young, but are not yet old. But do the math, and your life's middle point hits way sooner than you probably think. And as guys with some things to make up for over the past couple of decades, I feel a little behind. As it happened, I spent most of that mathematically significant 37th year at home, staring at the walls, as a pandemic upended every norm of everyday life. Turns out, plenty of truly middle-aged men are at a crossroads in their own life. For this issue, Men's Health surveyed a nationally representative sample of guys my exact age to learn about their fears and anxiety. As a whole, it's a portrait of men who are conflicted, and I recognize myself in many of the responses. Many who feel on average good, but have a sense that, well, there's more to life. If only they could figure out how to access it. That just maybe they're in the prime of their life, but they don't know how to take advantage of it, or, more crucially, appreciate it as it's happening, or how to extend it. Survey shows that men value time over money, but it wasn't a landslide, which is strange because if your days are getting scarcer, you'd think that each should hold more value. I've learned the hard way over the past few years. My 20s were wonderful, but some nights were a boozy blur. Then some nights turned into most nights, and my 20s turned into my 30s. At a certain point, I got tired of waking up feeling like crud, with a phone full of missed calls and pissed off texts and only a hazy half memory of what I did to deserve them. So at age 33, I took the painful, scary steps of getting sober. Many people get a little karmic kickback of dropping some weight when they stop drinking. But sadly, not me. I learned that losing weight requires a million small daily choices that add up slowly. So slowly, over time. It's taken several years, but I've lost 30 pounds, give or take. The point is, you can change and learn more about yourself in the process. In the following pages, we'll share where middle-aged men feel they're coming up short and how they make the most of each moment. How to set yourself up to be in great shape, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally too, for what's to come in the future. How to, well, take control. Or in some cases, realize that you never had it and press forward anyway. My partner of 8 years and I recently bought a house, even better, a terrier mutt named Eddie. There's a lot that's still uncertain in our lives, but maybe that's okay. I'm learning that there are benefits to staying flexible, to celebrating a little when the moment calls for it. So next time, when you're out to lunch with a pal, just order the dang cheeseburger. Now for the results. Here's how middle-aged men really feel about their health and fitness, careers and relationships, what's still keeping them up at night, and how to make most of any moment, any age. First question, how do you feel about being, quote, middle-aged, end quote? Well, 56%, pretty good. 21%, great. Not great, 20%. And finally, the bottom, terrible, 3%. The challenge, most guys felt pretty good, about being 37. But great was more elusive. In 1 and 4, lean more toward the middle life crisis. In terms of race and income, white men and guys making less than $35,000 more likely to feel not great than great. And overall, white men rated themselves worse than black, Asian, and Hispanic men. The opportunity, instead of worrying about whether you're the lost a step, try refocusing on grown-up gains, like deeper relationships, professional success, or being a dad. Reframe midlife crisis as, quote, transformational opportunities, end quote, to keep your momentum up, your attitude set on growth. Next, how do you physically feel right now? 14% said super fit. 58% said generally healthy. 24% said out of shape. And finally, 4% said they were a wreck physically. Challenge. 3 out of 4 37-year-olds felt generally healthy or better, but the majority fell short of their fitness goals. This is more true in the South and Midwest, with the West and Northeast doing marginally better. Either way, men making $100,000 or more skew toward being happily fit. Are you as fit as you hoped you'd be right now? 40% said yes. Whopping 60% said no. Here's your opportunity. Start with your why. Why am I working out, and what is the purpose behind it? Exercise encourages a healthy mindset. You'll also repeat mantras like mind right, body right to build even more motivation. Next, Men's Health asked, do you believe your best days are? Well, 18% said right now. 25% said behind you, and 57% of you said ahead of you. Your challenge, while more than half of the men surveyed were optimistic about what the future may bring, nearly 1 in 4 felt as if they'd already peaked. Fitness may play a part, and the 45% of men who said they were out of shape or a wreck thought their best days were behind them. But it's hardly the only answer. Your opportunity, rewire your bonds digitally. Men tend to lose touch with their friends as they age. And what's worse, the pandemic has limited your bar meetups, pickup games, and guy trips. But you can still connect through VR headsets, multiplayer games, or fantasy football. The middle age makeover. Our survey found that at age 37, some men need fresh examples of what being a great guy looks like. Here are 3 ways to be more supportive, socially conscious, and sexually empowered. 33%, that's the percentage of men surveyed, who admitted they had been too aggressive or demeaning, actions associated with toxic masculinity, toward others to get what they want. While 43% of men who have never taken a social justice action to improve equality for others, be it posting on social, donating, volunteering, or protesting. Just 50% of white men got involved, while blacks 72%, Asian 62%, and Hispanic 60%. Men were all more likely to do so. 20%, percentage of men who have kissed another man. Black men scored above average at 26%, while Asian men were the lowest at 9%. At the same time, only 9% of those surveyed identified as gay or bisexual, a number that was fairly consistent among all races. They'll take action. You can read A Better Man by Michael Ian Black. The comedian's book is written as an open letter to his college-age son, with a sharp critique of outdated models of masculinity. You can watch Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man with Emmanuel Acho. The NFL player turned YouTube show host goes deep on systemic racism with everyone from interracial couples to white police officers. And you can listen. Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard. Shepard and co-host Monica Padman tap interesting men to learn more about empathy, body image, creativity, and all things filed under, quote, the messiness of being human, end quote. Let me take a moment here to remind you, you're listening to Men's Health Magazine on Sight and the Sound Radio. You can listen to Sight and the Sound on channel HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as on Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at sightintosound.org. We are Sight Into Sound Radio since 1967. And now we return to our middle-aged survey. Are you as financially stable as you'd hoped? 39% of the men said yes, whopping 61% said no. The challenge, the make more, stress less threshold, was $75,000 a year, the point at which the number of men who felt anxious about money dropped by about a third. Opportunity. Actually, get a raise. Doctors suggest developing a list of specific suggestions around what you can do to help the company do better. Share it along with your request for more money to emphasize the benefits for your employer. Side hustles you love? They also encourage that. Is your job as fulfilling as you'd hope? 55% said no. 45% said yes. Your challenge, more than 45% of men weren't happy with their family life, and more than 50% weren't satisfied at work. Men who were in a relationship, who had kids, were more likely to feel content, but not by much. Is your family life as happy as you'd like? Well, yes, for 57%. No, 43%. Your opportunity? Plan your vacation days for that year right now. Commit to whatever it is you've always wanted to do and get it done on the weekends. Most of us only follow a plan and structure for work. What does that tell you about our priorities? Switch up yours. What feeling best describes your day-to-day mood? 40% said upbeat. 28% said stressed. 22% said indifferent. And finally, 10% said lonesome. Your challenge, on the whole, middle-aged men are more stressed, indifferent, or lonely than they are upbeat. Those reportedly being super fit or generally healthy more likely to feel upbeat, 57%, but even endorphins have a limit. The opportunity, it might be time to seek out new friends who also prioritize positivity. Doctors suggest keeping a gratitude journal. Next, what's your most important goal with exercise? Feeling stronger, 24%. Feeling more energetic, 34%. Looking better, 29%. And finally, managing stress at 13%. Many men prefer lifting alone, while as many as 1 in 4 may have lost their spotter to social distancing. Either way, 37-year-old men often lack gym buddies who can help them keep you accountable. Pandemic aside, how do you typically prefer to exercise? 64% said solo. 8% said in group classes. 23% with a friend. And finally, 5% are doing it virtually. Your opportunity? Sharing progress with family or friends can boost your energy. To stay charged, try controlled breathing. Close your eyes and listen to your breathing for 60 seconds. It will be a game changer. In general, how do you feel about the food you eat? 57% said, it's fun. You eat for joy, taste, experience, while 43% said it's a fuel. You eat to get fuel, fill up, gain protein, etc. Your challenge? Finding a smart way to just eat what you want when you want it. Doctors often snack on cottage cheese with pumpkin seeds and blueberries to crush your cravings. Yes, but also because they love the way the combo tastes. What's your greatest health fear? 31% said a heart attack. 28% said cancer. 17% dementia. 14% was diabetes, while 10% was erectile dysfunction. What's our challenge here? Well, men worry most about heart attacks, and with good reason. Heart disease is still the leading cause of death in the United States. It contributes to about 1 in every 4 deaths. Our opportunity. For heart health, the Mediterranean diet is a good way to control weight, cholesterol, blood pressure, and blood sugar. Shoot for at least 150 minutes of moderate activity per week to reap your heart-healthy benefits of exercise. And know your personal risks. Many conditions, including heart issues, cancer, and diabetes, affect black men at higher rates than white men. The thing you're most afraid of is 36% said some unforeseen tragedy or disaster. 30% said ruining a relationship, 23% said getting old and slowing down, and finally 11% said failing at work. Your challenge? Men feared being blindsided by catastrophe the most, but ruining a relationship and aging poorly were big too. Often for men, the fear of the unknown is actually not having spent time thinking about their mortality fears. Those can range from the next pandemic to the eventual death of your parents. Doctors have go-tos counseling or puking onto a page. Any thoughts, goals, or challenges you have. Long runs, bike rides, and walks in nature can offer a fresh perspective. What's your preferred way to care for your mental health? Exercise, 33%, sex, 23%, medication, 11%, alcohol, 7%, therapy, 6%, and finally, I don't have one, was 20%. Therapy ranked lowest for everyone, and black men were least likely to have any kind of plan at 24%. Your opportunity, remember, therapy is a reliable, judgment-free zone. For black men seeking black therapists, try therapyforblackmen.org. What do you want more of in life, time or money? Well, 57% said time. 43% said money. The challenge, men value time more than money, but we all have to work. In fact, half of those surveyed think they'll retire late or not at all. The opportunity, quote, free time, end quote, and, quote, quality time, end quote, are different. Make the latter count by prioritizing your pickup games, yoga classes, and book club. And finally, how often do you have sex? At least daily, 20%, weekly for 38%, monthly, or even less, 42%. Our challenge, overall, more than 40% of men said the one thing that we most improve their sex lives is more of it. Here's a 3-step action plan. Focus on quality, not quantity. Research shows that more isn't always better when it comes to sex. Try and ensure that the sex you're having is the best it can be, which may involve trying some new things, sharing or acting on some sexual fantasies, and telling each other what it is that you really want. watch your screen time. We know that people feel more in the mood and more satisfied with their sex lives when they feel an intimate connection. Put the phones away after work and spend time together at taking walks, playing with a pet, or cooking healthy meals, as opposed to binge-watching Netflix. And finally, get educated on erectile dysfunction, or ED. Among the men surveyed, 15% wanted better erections, and 72% had at least some concern that they may develop ED. Sexually related anxiety is often referred to as performance anxiety, which contributes to the idea that sex needs to be a production. Now let's take a look at America's most productive cities. If you started working from home in 2020, you may have noticed a perk: getting stuff done. Researchers at Harvard Business Review found that white-collar workers in lockdown spent 12% less time in big, time-sucking meetings. A number of tasks they rated as tiresome dropped by 56%. Our ranking of productive cities highlights that to-do list demolishing spirit based on strong job markets, city-specific GDP growth, resident income, mental health, yes, even the number of productivity-stoking coffee shops per 100,000 people. Most productive, let's give you the top five. Boise, Idaho, 2, San Francisco, California, 3, Raleigh, North Carolina, 4, San Jose, California, and actually the only Texas city in the top 20, Austin, Texas, at 5. So what about Boise, Idaho? Well, number 1, credit a powerful job market. Southwest Idaho is projected to see a 22% increase in number of health care occupations and a 13% increase in some tech roles from 2018 to 2028. Boise also had the second highest concentration of energizing coffee shops in the top 10 cities. Coming at number 3 was Raleigh, North Carolina. The city of Oaks scored highest in the, quote, relative income, end quote. Raleigh citizens saw their wages increase over a 5-year period, while housing costs remained stable and affordable. Money stress hurt productivity. People who suffered financial anxiety were 5.8 times as likely not to finish daily tasks. That's according to a 2019 survey. And finally, at number 4, San Jose, California. Combine the city's top GDP growth score with the second highest mental health score, and you have a productive residents who also feel good. One possible reason: San Jose is ringed by state and county parks and a national wildlife refuge. Just 15 extra minutes of daily walking can improve productivity, according to a 2019 study by Rand Europe. I went to the Men's Health website in order to try and find out where Houston ranked in productivity. Unfortunately, I couldn't quite figure it out, but by next week, I hope to give that information for you. Regardless, we have come to the end of our program. I have been reading Men's Health magazine. I'm Peter Gilmore. This has been a production of Sight into Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Highland United Methodist Church, 1808 North Dixie, and volunteers offer a backdoor blessing meal at 6 p.m. Wednesdays in the Fellowship Hall. There is no charge. Any donations contributed go toward Highland's Children's Ministries. Call 332-0261 or email highlandumc.odessa@gmail.com or visit highlandodessa.com.
Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, The Street Lawyer by John Grisham. Michael Brock is billing the hours, making the money, rushing relentlessly to the top of Drake and Sweeney,
a giant D.C. law firm. One step away from partnership, Michael has it all. Then in an instant, it all comes undone. A homeless man takes nine lawyers hostage in the firm's plush offices. When it's all over, the man's blood is splattered on Michael's face.